people know that they've been playing against the famous Old Dog Blues.
Very good Anzac Day morning to you all as we begin our footy weekend on 91.3 Sport FM's Breakfast with the Blues. Sadly, it's been way too long since the Mighty Blues last held the Premiership Cup aloft. However, your official WA Network supporter group of the Carlton Football Club, WA Blues, remain to bring you the best start to your footy weekend on radio today. Your host today, as always, I'm myself, John Allen, joined by Chris Brownlee and Craig Bradford. Good morning, boys.
Good morning, Johnny. Good morning, how are you?
John. Not too bad. And how was your Anzac Day morning? We're out in your driveways doing
mate,
the door
service?
I was out
at early the hours this morning, yes.
Yes, definitely out there, mate. There wasn't many up Malcolm Street this morning, but I was there.
Yeah, same with us. We were up there with the kiddies, and it was an enjoyable morning. Now, as always on the program today, we look at all the latest AFL and Blues news. We've got our special live guest today is the Duke, Earl Spaulding. And given that we would have been playing North Melbourne this week, we'll be having a look at the 1995 preliminary final. We cross live to the hyphen after that. David Rees-Jones for the shirt front. We'll be discussing the final round of the 1987 game before the finals and leading up to a few events that led to the mighty Battle of Britain. Now, it is a special day, Anzac Day, so at the end of the show today, as a tribute, we'll be reading out the names of the fallen who served or represented the Carlton Football Club as well. And, Craig, would you like to just give a shout-out to our sponsors, please?
Yeah, no worries at all. Okay, we'd like to thank the WA Blues major sponsor is Hyundai WA, Platinum sponsors Allmark and Associates, Tech Tiger, Master Picture Framers, and the Carlton Football Club home in WA, The Empire at 220 Great Eastern Highway in Lathall Lane.
Thanks very much to our wonderful sponsors, and a little shout-out to Barbaro Butchers as well, who've jumped on board and donated some prizes for the season raffle. Now, last week, Craig, you gave a special shout-out. I've got a special shout-out this week, just briefly, to the Neil family. Now, this is one that touches the hearts of many AFL followers because Justin, who was a mate of mine in school, he sadly passed away this week after a battle with motor neuron disease. So I've been in touch with those guys this week and just to see how Neil Danaher himself is going and what they're doing with the program. So just encourage anyone out there at the moment. I know times are tough, but if you do have the resources and you're feeling generous, fight MND. Have a look at that one on the website and throw them a bone because they're doing fantastic work and they're working really, really hard to try and find a cure for this insidious disease, motor neuron disease. Once again, shout out to the Neil family. I know you're doing it tough this week, and we're thinking of you. Now, off to Chris Brownlee, the Carlton Wikipedia man himself, for AFL news.
Not sure about that, but here we go. Let's start off on what was said late last night or yesterday afternoon. The AFL has delayed revealing its return to play plans until the week beginning May 11. Having 2 weeks ago told clubs it would outline its course out of the COVID-19 enforced shutdown by the start of next week, AFL Chief Executive Officer Gillon McLachlan late Friday informed all industry officials of a new timeline. The National Cabinet has indicated that they will review restrictions at a meeting on May 10, provided the curve is still flattening and testing rates are increasing. McLachlan said to the clubs in a memo, "The timetable we will now work to is the week beginning May 11, when we will be able to provide full details for clubs and supporters on a proposed date for a resumption of training and a return to play. That will give us time to finalise our national planning while continuing to work with governments and chief health officers around the country."
Might I just add, why do Victorians call a memo a memo? It's memo.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Next.
Why do you say derby and not derby? Derby,
that's
derby.
What it is, mate.
I mean, so, you know.
Hey, you got two Vicks in here, don't forget.
You say potato.
I'm tired of being ambushed, so I'm looking for anything. Right, hey, go.
All right, okay. Also, the AFL is weighing up the possibility of housing all 18 clubs in one city to resume matches this season. The league's general manager of clubs and broadcasting, Travis Old, has given the strongest indication yet that teams will be placed in quarantine hubs in order to return to play. Old and the AFL executive continue to work throughout the best structure that includes the likelihood of between 1 to 3 hubs. It is understood the AFL is making plans with all states and territories over the possibility of housing a quarantine hub. The ultimate decision will rest on governments providing a tick of approval. Earlier this week, Western Australian Premier Mark McGowan confirmed his government had held conversations with the AFL over the potential housing of clubs within the best health advice. If we can have teams based here, and if we can have a competition based in WA, that will be good for the community, he said. Then on Thursday, it was reported that four regions of Victoria are under consideration for the use of an accommodation base: Mornington Peninsula, South Coast, Yarra Valley and Macedon Precinct. If anyone knows those areas within Melbourne, Victoria, this in June, July, August, freezing cold.
Yeah, very cold.
So, but the cost of operating a hub or hubs would run into tens of millions of dollars, given accommodation that would be required for at least 6 weeks, 3 weeks of pre-season training, minimum 3 weeks of matches, at least 740 players. So it would be it'd be huge. But it's worth noting that every state and territory, excluding Victoria, New South Wales and the ACT, currently require a 14-day self-isolation period upon entering that state. So does that favour games being played in Melbourne if resumed?
Not feasible.
It's going to be hard.
I'm just throwing it out there. I still think it'll be hubs all around Australia, and there'll be certain teams playing. And
if they go ahead with it, that'll be the only solution.
Yep. Also, the 2020 draft, the clubs have been banned from interviewing draftees indefinitely as the AFL allows the prospects to focus on their education. With the majority of the draft hopefuls around the country still completing Year 12 studies, the league is mindful that many will be doing so from home, and the AFL is aware that recruiting and list management teams have been stood down across the competition during this shutdown period. They were unlikely to interview anyway. So the AFL wrote to the clubs last week saying the stop they put on contacting in March had now been extended for the foreseeable future.
Does this change much? Does this open it up for managers to contact the parents of the player without their involvement and maybe decisions being made for them that they don't want?
That could happen, because the managers are always going to look after themselves to put some money in their pocket.
That's right.
Of course they are.
So following on too from those accidents last week, Lockie Hunter has been suspended for four AFL matches and fined $5,000 and relinquished his vice-captaincy position at the Western Bulldogs. Adelaide's Tyson Stengold has also been suspended for four matches and fined $2,500 for drink driving by Adelaide. Following on from Luke Beveridge's wanting the AFL to raise a draft age from 18 last week, our own Sam Walsh came out in support of retaining the current draft age. Walsh, speaking on Tuesday, said that 18-year-olds are already for senior football and suggested that raising the draft age in the wake of the game's suspension of play could simply be delaying the inevitable for many young football hopefuls.
Now, just be mindful, guys. Remember those penalties for Lockie Hunter and Tyson Stengel in regards to that's the club-imposed sanctions on top of whatever their respective states' sanctions or penalties will be. Just keep that in mind for the end of the show when the weekly whack is upon you.
Yes.
Okay. Ooh, something to look forward to.
Okay.
Craig, I'm going to throw it over to you for Blues News. Sorry, did I cut you off? Did you have another piece there, Chris?
That's okay, mate. There's more, but Craig.
I think 10 minutes is enough for me, pal.
just basically with COVID-19 the way it's going and with Virgin being the way they are, Kane Little has just basically come out and said that their partnership with Virgin's been enormous, and as far as Carlton are concerned, it's going to continue. So,
mate, can I just jump in there? Sorry to interrupt you, but we could potentially stand to lose up to $2 million a year in sponsorship if Virgin goes under.
Yeah,
that hurts.
So that's going to hurt us enormously.
Yeah. So, but as Kane said, at this stage they're sticking fat with what they've got, and hopefully, fingers crossed, everything comes through. And
yeah, I like the way he spoke in regards to that. And,
yeah.
You know, at the WA Blues, our major sponsor is Hyundai WA, who are also a major sponsor of the club. Hyundai Australia, I should say. And they've been doing that tough as well, and they've deferred some sponsorship money for us. And, you know, we've had to speak with them and just say, mate, we saw that coming, we understand.
Mm.
And, you know, they've got lots of people they sponsor in WA, Wildcats, stuff like that, a lot of money. So we just said to them, mate, we're going to keep plugging this. So anyone out there that does need a new car, please support Hyundai, because they are fantastic sponsors. And we hope that they're with us for a very long time.
I'm pretty sure your company's going to go and buy all new Hyundai's, mate.
Our companies
you better
are,
go and
yes.
give a shout
our
out.
Company, well, I might have to get him to go see the boys at the CIL Group or a Brazerflex and
yes, I'd say
get
so.
Him some business.
Yes,
because nice. I know my car's due soon, so.
Yeah, beautiful. There we go. You want to give me a plug again there, Craig?
WA Hyundai.
No, your company.
Oh, I'll speak to him later.
Okay.
Also, legend of the game and Carlton great Greg Diesel Williams, who has spent plenty of time at Icon Park across his few years working with few of the younger kids, has come out and said that the boys have improved a lot, and basically said, although he said Richmond beat us, he's fairly confident that the young kids, through what he's seen, through his, because he helps out with some training on them, he said, maybe not this year, but next year, he said, these kids are going to be...
going to explode.
Explode.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, coming from him...
Wish I'd hurry up, I've been waiting too long.
Yeah, yeah.
Long time
it's a fairly
drinks.
Good call. There's a lot of talent there, and Jack Martin's really topped it up.
Yeah.
Incredibly, hasn't he?
Well, you watch the first game. He's just... And Cripps has come out and said, you haven't seen the best of Martin yet.
You haven't seen the best of Cripps yet. He's only just played 100 games.
I know.
Scary
yeah.
stuff, guys. Scary
yeah.
stuff.
Also, Tom Williamson come out during the week saying basically, you know, he's the best he's felt in 2 years and he's been ready to go. Now the COVID-19's come and sort of put a bit of a hold on his season. But he said his body's best it's felt. He's just itching to get back, basically because he just thinks he's ready to go now to that next level and put the faith or show the club what he's got with the faith that the club's put in him. So
pros
what
and cons,
we've seen
isn't there with the layoff as such. You know, there's a lot of talk about soft tissue injuries when they come back and stuff like that. But for the older players, the rest will prolong them a little bit and help them out. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Look, just seeing what he had before he went down, he's got huge potential, just the back issue. Yeah. A little bit on Sam Doherty's come out and said that,
there's another one.
Yeah, he's been down and out, but look, he's back training, and he said he's ready to go. He's been doing a bit of spare time work with the McKinlop Family Services, which is...
Nice.
Which is touches him basically. His cousin Caitlin has had a bit of work through there as well. So
big shout out for Sam for reading out the service.
Yeah, heard that this morning.
Yep.
And we'll finish off with just a little bit of AFLW with the girls. Big congratulations to Georgia G, Maddie Prisparkis.
Well done.
I got it right that time. And Charlotte Wilson, they all made the final 22 of the under 22 team. So that was good to see. Carlton also have got an announcement with Big Ant Studios, who are becoming a platinum partner through the AFLW.
Nice.
Which is good to see. Also, Maddie
Prisparkis.
Got it. I had to get it wrong. Congratulations to her. She won her second Carlton BNF. For such a young kid, she's got enormous talent. And one for Chris Brownie here for the best first-year player.
Who sponsors that award?
Sponsored by Vizzy.
G'day to the Pratt family
out
there.
The Pratt family. Big shout-out to Grace Egan.
Who else sponsors her?
The WA Blues.
Yes.
So congratulations to her on winning the best first year player. So
well done, Grace.
Yep.
Also, just to finish off with, Carlton have come out and said that they've still got huge plans as far as recruiting mature players go. And by the sounds of things, they're going to have another big crack at Tom Papley as well.
Yep.
So
old Schmeary.
Yeah. So hopefully there's some good news coming up.
One thing though, while you're on the AFLW, before you
we
did,
only gave him 11 minutes.
You did forget. Yeah. You did forget to wrap up. Can you pronounce her name again for me again?
Maddie Prisparkis.
Good. She finished second.
Second.
In the AFL Players Association MVP on
AFLW.
Monday night.
AFLW.
AFLW. Yes. Yeah. So another shout out to Maddie.
Yeah.
Prisparkis.
Well done.
I'm getting good at this. An Icon Park.
Yeah. Well done, Icon.
Well done.
So,
fantastic work, guys. And look, just before we go to our first break, the online raffles with the WA Blues are massive thank you to everyone who's been buying tickets. This is not what we expected at all. Craig hasn't bought any tickets yet. But
I haven't got the PayPal. What have you had?
Oh, come on. Oh, it's easy to set up, mate.
Hasn't got PayPal. He owns 15 businesses. And he's telling me telling me he hasn't got PayPal. Anyway, sponsored by Holland, but he hasn't got PayPal. Anyway, so, look, yeah, massive thanks to everyone out there who's jumped on board the Facebook page, WA Blues, and bought raffle tickets. Not what we expected. We're wondering whether it would be a success or not, trying to do stuff for the fans while we're not at the Empire watching the games, and it's just exploded. And that keeps us afloat in being able to buy more memorabilia for next year. We really rely on it. Geez, you guys are loyal. We love you very much. Thanks for all your support. The other one is on Friday, yesterday, we announced the season raffle prizes. So big shout out to all the sponsors who have donated prizes. The first prize for the season raffle this year is the Mark Murphy signed 2020 Puma jumper with the commemorative plaque. It's going to have three photos from his playing career in the frame. Blair's putting an extra special effort into this season raffle first prize to make it a, you know, they're always special anyway, but this is going to be a beauty. We've got prizes donated by Allmark / Barbaro Butchers, which is a couple of $200 meat packs. So thank you. Go and support Barbaro Butchers, guys. Raf, he does a great job. Also, Blair and Maria Buckingham at Master Picture Framers donating a $200 framing voucher, and we all know what they do.
They do a great job.
Hyundai have donated a $350 sports pack, Hyundai N sports pack, with Bluetooth headphones and bloody big sports bag and heaps of other stuff there, and because I didn't put it in front of myself, I can't rattle it off and all the bullet points.
And also the WA Blues pack.
WA Blues pack, which is worth about $100, are chucked in there. All of our WA Blues merchandise that we get, a 6-can cooler bag with all the coffee cups and travel mugs and this and that and everything else and key rings, and it's a pretty good value pack, that one. And I know I've missed one because I always miss one. I'm sure I've missed one. But there'll be other great stuff there. And we're keeping it live so that if any of you want to jump on board as a business, if you are blue baggers and you own a business and you want to get on there and get mentioned every week, send us an inbox on the WA Blues Facebook page. Now, it is time for a break. When we come back, the one and only, the Duke, Earl Spalding. Go Blues.
Perth Window and Door Replacement Company remain your prestige conversions and replacement specialists since 1983. With an extensive range of products and services, they pride themselves on their ability to tailor solutions to your individual requests. Not just proud supporters of the Mighty Blues, they are respected members of the Australian Glass and Window Association, ready to serve you with the highest standards and integrity. So for your next sliding, bifold, French, awning, security screen, doors or windows, trust only Perth Window and Door Replacement Company. Station sponsor.
Is your business website stuck in the age of dial-up internet? Is your business website lost in the jungle on page 20 of Google? Perhaps no one can find your business online and your competitors are stealing your customers. It's okay. Tech Tiger can help. For professional web design, digital marketing, and getting your business found in search engines, visit techtiger.com.au. Tech Tiger, proud sponsors of the WA Blues.
Station sponsor.
We have been given the challenge to explain what Allmark, Perth's leading specialists in marking and identification, do in 30 seconds. Plaques, badges, laser cutting, stamps, workwear, trophies, promotional products, hats, caps, shirts, signage, engraving, stickers, screen printing, stencils, stubby holders, digital printing, honour boards, banners, awards, labels. Oh, who are we kidding? They can do any custom job we want. Allmark. Engrave. Print. Identify. Charles Street, North Perth.
With over 20 years of experience, let Blair Buckingham, your master framer, help make your memories lasting ones with his framing expertise. An extensive range of products assures you will find what you're looking for at Master Picture Framers. Fast, friendly service and professional custom framing in all aspects answers all of your framing inquiries. A display of original artwork is always available in our showroom, and Blue Baggers displaying their 2020 membership card can receive a 20% discount on all framing. Master Picture Framers, Cannington. Come see us today.
Station sponsor.
And they will know that they've been playing against the famous. against the famous Old Dog Blues.
Good morning, welcome back everyone to Breakfast with the Blues. You're joined here by myself, John Allen, Twist Brownie and Craig Bradford. Now, before we bring in this next guest, we're going to take you down a trip down memory lane for about a minute, and we'll relive the end and the final siren and the 1995 preliminary final against North Melbourne.
Scott gets the ball up to Laidley, back to centre wing, Carey, little hand pass off to Roberts, he's lost it, maybe another score coming up for Carlton, whistle's gone, it's a Roberts free kick. So maybe North can actually manage a goal in this last quarter. They kick just two behinds. Kick by Roberts inside the 50. Longmire comes from behind. Madden was there in front. Head comes to Sexton. It's going to be a free kick. Advantage. Running down the clock now. Hogg towards the wing on the southern stand side of the ground. Kept in by Scholl. No, it wasn't. Over the boundary line. And it'll be a throw-in. The clock stops. 7 seconds left. It's 118-56. Well, they deserve it, Carlton. They won the home and away series by 4 clear games. And tonight, they get their 15th straight victory. There's Hogg. Ball out of bounds again at half forward. There's the siren. The Blues in the grand final to play Geelong.
And as always, we love the sound of that roar at the end of a Carlton victory, especially in a big game. And we went through a fair bit of adversity in that game, actually. So to come up 62-point victors was no mean feat. And the man who, as he often did, set the catalyst at the beginning of the games and set the tone physically for Carlton was none other than Earl Spalding. Earl, welcome to the program. Great to have you back, mate.
Yeah, thanks, John. Cheers.
No worries. Now, how are you handling life in isolation?
Yeah, no, climbing the walls, waiting to be able to go down to the pub and have a beer. Watching a lot of TV I wouldn't normally watch. Yeah, I think battling like everyone else.
Yeah, no, we can't wait there. Hopefully get you down to the Empire to watch a game as well, mate, and I'll buy you that first beer, don't worry about that. Now, he's obviously heard my reputation, he's laughing, I said that. So anyway, look, just a quick one before I throw you over to Chris and Craig. Mate, the succession plan at Perth with the coaching, how's that all looking now? You're still going to be going back or will be handing the reins over?
No, I'll still be handing the reins over. I'll be hanging out around the club, but I'll make sure that that Gary's got all the support he needs in his first year as senior coach. And you know, I'll be there as long as he needs me, really. But I'm pretty hopeful we'll be up and going. Hopefully by July at the latest. You know, our figures over here have been pretty good. We're in a pretty good environment, in WA. That we're pretty fortunate with the isolation in that regard. So, I'm trying to put a positive spin on everything when I speak to the players and other coaches.
Nice. Good morning, Earl. Chris Brownie here. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, Chris.
That's good, mate. Before we have a look into the 95 prelim final against North, can I first talk about how you actually got to the Blues? You played with the Demons and you were almost traded to another club. Was it St Kilda or Frio before joining the Blues on that frantic trade day? What happened there?
No, Frio weren't even in existence back then. That was I was trying to get back here, actually, back to Perth, to the West Coast, and pretty early on in that process, we sort of realised that that wasn't going to happen. I'd signed a document before I left with Richmond because I was over here for holidays, just in case that all went pear-shaped, which it did. So Richmond then couldn't do a deal, so we were sort of left in limbo, and I had spoken to Carlton a few times, as had my late father. Collo had rung him, Parco, and Big Jack. So I think the sway of the numbers got us across the line there. It was a bit convoluted. We had to sign a document in the last minute, which I don't know why the old man was signing it for me because I was 26 at the time. But anyway, that's just... that's how the story goes.
You weren't still at the pub, were you, though, mate?
No. I was actually in Perth with a few teammates from Melbourne. We had about four of us staying at at my mother's place, so we're enjoying life over here.
Fair enough. Mate, let's go to the 99 preliminary final. The week leading up to the game produced heavy rain in Melbourne, and on the Saturday night, the centre square in particular was a quagmire. And if I remember rightly, the umpires threw the ball up instead of bouncing it. Do you think that had a bearing on the clearances, as North ruckman Corey McKernan at that time, he couldn't use his athleticism, which in turn helped old Harry to provide the ball to our midfield?
I do remember because Richmond played during, oh, sorry, Richmond and Geelong played out at Waverley during the day, and their game was just under constant rain. I don't know if it was torrential at that stage, but it was constant. But yeah, it had rained a fair bit prior to that as well, and our game was dry, but as you mentioned, the centre square was just a glue pot. I didn't really think too much about that. I knew it was just going to be a bit of a grind of a game, especially in the middle, and as soon as you went anywhere near the middle, your boots got heavier, your jumper got heavier, your shorts got heavier, so by the end of the night, we're pretty exhausted, but we played some pretty good footy that night, especially in the first half and the back end of the last quarter when North came at us again.
Yeah, g'day Earl. Craig Bradford, how are you?
Good, mate.
Good. Listen, one of the biggest concerns going into the game was going to be Wayne Carey. But Soss did a huge job, and do you think the influence that Soss had over Floss. Him sort of changed their game plans a little bit?
Oh, look, definitely. He had a great final series, Soss. He did the number on Abbott the week after in the GF as well. We played North three times that year, including the prelim. And coming into, I think, our last three or four games, we played North, Essendon and West Coast over here in that bracket. So that sort of steeled us pretty well to play finals, what do you reckon? Having beaten North two times previously. And how reasonably comfortably, we sort of probably had a bit of an edge over them, I think, mentally.
Yeah.
That changed pretty quickly after that.
Yeah. How good was Soss? I mean, he, in that final series, that goal that Wayne kicked on him in the prelim was the only goal kicked on him for the whole final series. What an important cog he was in that back line. How good was the man?
Yeah, look, he wasn't quick, but he just had unbelievable strength for his size. That low centre of gravity, and you couldn't push him over. He had really good ball sense in terms of reading the ball off the boot, so he'd often get there first. And he just had those arms that were about a foot longer than they looked. He just always managed to get a spoiling when he needed to. So, and he had good support down there too. I mean, you've got Peter Dean, Michael Sexton, Hoggy when he was down there on the smalls. They all sort of worked really well in the group. Glenn Mountain had a really good year that year. I'm forgetting someone important. Andy McKay, he was fantastic. Ange with his rebound running out of there. So
yeah.
We're really fortunate with the back line we had. And playing in that environment gives you confidence, really.
Yeah, mate, within that game, we lost Dino early with concussion, but he did come back on. And we lost Fraser Brown with the ankle injury. Diesel also concussed. I think Hoggy got smacked across the head and had to get stitches. We didn't score in that third quarter, and we looked like being overrun, but we came out and kicked 7-0 in the last quarter. Was there any special words said at three-quarter time?
Oh, look, not really. I think we realised we'd probably got a bit ahead of ourselves because we'd be a five-goal lead or something at half-time, and it could have been more. We were sort of dominating the play in the second quarter, and we probably thought the job was done. So, we just sort of collectively had a rest, obviously, at three-quarter time, and a look at ourselves and thought, well, no, we're better than that. And as soon as we kicked, I think, the first couple in the last, which took a while, I don't think it was early, we managed to break them.
Chris has just nicked Icon Bradford's question there. Yeah, so let him regroup.
Yeah, he's throwing me there because that was my next question. But
go on, mate.
Yeah, look, it must have been a bit of a blow losing Deeney early, because he does have that support with Soss, and I actually played basketball against him, and he's a tough man for him to go down, and it must have been hit pretty hard.
Yeah, I think it was Wayne Schwasser. Yeah, I got him. I'm trying to remember if it was off, was it off the ball, or he just got him at the right angle, but he left the ground. Old Mill. Good on you, Mill.
Yeah.
It was like you mentioned. It was a bit of a casualty war there for a while. Guys going down left, right, and centre. But You know, I don't think at any stage that phased us losing players. It was more of just we knew the talent that North had. We just had to, you know, somehow get our mojo back, and we managed to do it, obviously.
I do remember Schwatter being heavily booed and chastised whenever the ball went near him after that.
He jumped off the ground. He virtually turned and got him, collecting a beauty.
Yeah.
Hey, mate, that final series, even though we were supposed to talk about North, that whole final series, except for the first final we played the Bears, that was probably our toughest final, and we only just got over the line.
Yeah, it was a real arm wrestle that day. And a pretty dour game, wasn't real.
Yeah, I think
it was
Roger Merritt's last game too, if I recall.
It was.
No, I'm pretty sure he played on. I think he'd said it was going to be his last game. I remember Deeney played on him and said to him after the song, I said, mate, you're mad if you give away now, go around again, which he did, which I wanted to throttle Deeney because no one liked playing against Roger, I can tell you.
Mate,
I think I'm 0-3 against Roger.
And then we won the grand final, but there's something that, if I recall, all you guys come back to the ground, and it was like Hollywood movie stars, you all come busting, etc., etc. But I've got a feeling, if I recall, you might have gone out that night or the night after, and you got kicked out of somewhere where no one ever gets kicked out of, the Tunnel Nightclub.
Yeah, I managed to do that, yeah. Not that proud of it, but I didn't do anything bad. I was just being a smart-ass collecting glasses, and had them stacked up over my shoulder, and someone didn't like that. So I got me marching orders, which is probably a blessing.
Another thing people probably don't recall, because this is obviously a football show, but you actually played 3 games, I think, for WA, state level. And I think your first game, I think you took 4 for 30 against South Aussie and even got Hooksy out. Is that correct?
Yeah, a long time ago now. Yeah. I played 4, if you include one, which was a game against Sri Lanka, but yeah, 3 Shield games. In that 1 year, so yeah.
I love how Brownie always follows a stitch up, like getting out of a pub with a inspirational cricket highlight or something like that.
I've got to go whack and then bring the high. You've got to do the balancing.
People don't forget, Brownie. Buddy. You've got to be careful.
There's also too, Earl, your nicknames: the Snake, Golf Ball, the Duke. Which one do you prefer?
Steve Turner gave me the Snake at Perth back in my early days, and you know when you see someone you haven't seen for a long time, that one comes out. So I don't mind that. I don't mind anything, really.
Yep, fair enough. Also,
anything's better than Earl, I think. I still feel like mum and dad for that.
Also too, a lot of people wouldn't recall or remember, but your brother actually played a game at the Blues, I think, back in 93. I think it was against Fitzroy, but he returned home pretty soon after that. Any reasons why, or just didn't like Melbourne life? Or
no, he got drafted 100 and something off when they used to go that deep in the draft, and came across and had played a few years at Perth prior to that, so he was a mature age. I'm pretty sure he would have been 24 at that stage, and he was a bit shorter than me, but had a really big tank, could run all day, and a really courageous player too. And he played the first game. He came on as I went off, basically. So I don't know how much time we actually spent to get on the ground that day, because I had a shocker. And then he got dropped the next week. Played some pretty good footy in the reserves, but never got the opportunity. I think Parker sort of probably acknowledged down the track that he probably didn't get the opportunity he deserved. And then the next year, the list went from 52 to 42. So, they kept some younger guys on ahead of him. And he had 1 year in Adelaide on the way home, at Port Adelaide, where they won the flag, and then back home. He probably would have stayed, or obviously would have stayed if he was still on the list, but he sort of had a bit of pressure to go home from his now wife, because once again she was over here on her own, so that probably helped make that decision for him. But he was pretty unlucky, and he had a fantastic waffle career. Culminating in the flag at Ishmael in 98.
Yeah, I remember that well, and the two panellists here, ex-Victorians, they wouldn't have a clue what you're talking about, but he did have a fantastic waffle career. Now, look, we do got to wrap it up, and, mate, thank you heaps for coming on. We know you're a bit tired and a bit dusty this morning, so it's been a big effort. Thanks for not getting too grumpy with us.
That's all right.
And, mate...
Hopefully we get to see the Blues turn it around pretty soon.
Yeah. No, and look, so many wonderful memories, mate. We thank you for all those great memories and the catalysts that you set at most of, at the beginning of most of those games, especially Guy McKenna's. But it's been a ripper having you on the show again, mate. So have a good day and good Anzac Day and go the Blues.
Go Blues.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Earl. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Earl.
Cheers.
Mate, the thing I remember about Earl, and it'll always stick in my mind, is that
smother
off Peter Riccardi's boot before running into the open goal in 1995.
I was almost going to say that, but I thought...
That was a ripper. That was a ripper. No, but it was good to reminisce about the prelim of 95. I mean, we did come back from a little bit of adversity there, and it was a glue pot in the middle. I'll never forget that first throw-up to start the game. Yeah. And it took about 10 seconds for every single person in that square to be covered in mud. It was just one of those games back then. We don't get to see that anymore, so it's actually quite entertaining to look at that game and watch it in its entirety again.
So
we'll go to a break. Before we do, just a reminder that at the end of the show today, we'll be, as an Anzac Day tribute, we'll be reading out the names of all those who represented the Carlton Football Club, players, staff, admin, that also served and didn't come home. We'll be remembering them with a special tribute at the end. After the break, we'll have the hyphen David Rees-Jones talking about the all the events of 87. We discussed a couple of weeks ago when we would have been playing Hawthorn about the premiership. What we didn't discuss is everything that led up to and the Battle of Britain, and that's what we got coming up. Can't wait. Go the Mighty Blues. Whenever I'm ready to bring in the ad.
We have been given the challenge to explain what Allmark, Perth's leading specialists in marking and identification, do in 30 seconds. Plaques, badges, laser cutting, stamps, workwear, trophies, promotional products, hats, caps, shirts, signage, engraving, stickers, screen printing, stencils, stubby holders, digital printing, honour boards, banners, awards, labels. Oh, who are we kidding? They can do any custom job we want. Allmark. Engrave, print, identify. Charles Street, North Perth.
With over 20 years of experience, Laird Blair Buckingham, your master framer, helped make your memories lasting ones with his framing expertise. An extensive range of products assures you will find what you're looking for at Master Picture Framers. Fast, friendly service and professional custom framing in all aspects answers all of your framing inquiries. A display of original artwork is always available in our showroom, and Blue Baggers displaying their 2020 membership card can receive a 20% discount on all framing. Master Picture Framers, Cannington. Come see us today.
Station sponsor. Is your business website stuck in the age of dial-up internet? Is your business website lost in the jungle on page 20 of Google? Perhaps no one can find your business online, and your competitors are stealing your customers. It's okay. Tech Tiger can help. For professional web design, digital marketing, and getting your business found in search engines, visit techtiger.com.au. Tech Tiger, proud sponsors of the WA Blues.
Station sponsor.
Perth Window and Door Replacement Company remain your prestige conversions and replacement specialist since 1983. With an extensive range of products and services, they pride themselves on their ability to tailor solutions to your individual requests. Not just proud supporters of the Mighty Blues, they are respected members of the Australian Glass and Window Association, ready to serve you with the highest standards and integrity. So for your next sliding, bifold, French, awning, security screen, doors or windows, trust only Perth Window and Door Replacement Company. Station sponsor.
And they will know that they've been playing against the famous Old Dark Blues.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Breakfast with the Blues, hosted by myself, John Allen, Craig Bradford and Chris Brownie. Now it's time to give a very warm welcome to our friend David Rees-Jones on Breakfast with the Blues for the shirt front. But before we do, just a reminder that in 1987, we ended up finishing on top before the final series as a result of a kick after the siren. And let's just have a listen to that last minute or so.
And a throw in to take place. 2 points the difference. 30 and a half minutes played in this great last quarter. Madden and Mossop. Over the top comes McCann. Bradley. Quick kick back. One for McCann. Couldn't take it. Here's a chance for Justin Madden. It's going to lob in the square. Kernahan! And Kernahan has been absolutely sensational. He's kicked 5 goals. And the siren has sounded. The siren has sounded at VFL Park. Kernahan is only going to be kicking from 15 metres out. It's his 17th possession. Let's check how many marks he's taken for the game. I think mark number 13. Now, it's not an easy shot. There is tremendous pressure on him.
Scores are level at Prince's Park.
And the scores are level at Prince's Park. Now, if Kernahan kicks it, North Melbourne will lose all chance of the double chance. It's a tough kick, and the crowd is hooting. North Melbourne, that is. And every player on the mark of North Melbourne's waving. And look at the goal umpire, the concentration as Kernahan moves in. And he's put it right through the centre. And that is the mark of a champion. And Stephen Kernahan has kicked a great goal, a captain's goal. And what a great game he's played. That was his 6th goal for the match.
On that wonderful note, with that roar, that's got to be one of the best roars we've had this year, playing back the classic games. But, Hyphen, welcome. Good morning to you on this Anzac Day. How you going?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Yeah, good to be here.
That must bring back some wonderful memories. How good was Sticks, that clutch goal on a bit of an angle?
Yeah, well, I think that was before his sort of groin started blowing up, and then he wasn't as reliable as he was in his early days, but... Yeah, look, having it in his hands was never in doubt. And, if you wanted anyone to be shooting for goal for you, especially at that time in 87, you wanted it in his hands. And, he got us over the line, which was fantastic. Because Hawthorn played Geelong down at Cadinia Park, and Geelong had to beat them to make the finals. And if Hawthorn won and we lost, they would have finished on top. So... They got up really late in the game too. So it was lucky that Sticks put it through to finish on top. And we got the week's break.
And for the listeners, that was all important too. It wasn't just the week's break and the double chance. It was straight through the grand final if you won in your first week. Which so it was did. A yeah. There's a ripper there Big by bonus. Sticks over to you, Chris.
Yeah, good morning, Dave. How you going? How are you holding up in these weird times, mate?
It is strange times, but anyway.
Yeah, mate, Dave, North led by 16 points at half time, and we kicked 10 goals in the third quarter. What was the turnaround? Was there any inspiration from Wolsey's speech at three-quarter time, or, I mean, from half time?
At half time? I can't really remember that, but Carlton was sort of renowned for, and it's sort of, you got termed the premiership corner, and Carlton... renowned for coming out and really turning things on and scoring heavily in the third quarter and breaking the game open. It was funny because it wasn't something that was said or happened, but quite often our third quarters were our best quarters in a lot of games.
Now, I watched that full replay the other day, and what it was they were tenacious that day. They put everything into that game, and we'll lead into that a little bit later, the Battle of Britain, but that hurt them. That certainly hurt them. Craig, you got something there?
Yeah, David, how you going? Craig Bradford here.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, good, mate. Listen, Bernie Evans's second half, especially that third quarter, mate, he was huge. Was there a reason he didn't play much in the first half? Was it a
I'm not too sure. He came on the ground in the second semi and got reported, but it's about 2 minutes of burn on the ground. So Wolsey liked to rotate, smaller blokes through and because players such as Bernie had a massive impact. I mean, I played with him at the Swans in South Melbourne, so actually helped get Bernie across to Carlton because he's such a very, very good player, but also he's a terrific teammate. Tremendous footballer and great bloke.
Okay.
Don't fight over it, boys. Don't fight over it. Ask a bloody question.
Mate, in the last quarter there, we led by 10 points. But then Jimmy Cracker and Jason Love score goals, put North in front by 2 points. I think with less than about a minute to go. Earlier we mentioned about it, but what was it like, the feeling, watching Sticks line up for goal for that win?
Well, there were a couple of things there because we're playing at Waverley and Waverley also had the big screen, the modern screen. With the scores coming up of the games around, so we were actually watching a bit of the scores, you know, when you got a chance to Geelong and Hawthorne, and Geelong sort of got a little bit in front of Hawthorne, and we thought, oh, we might be safe here anyway if we do get beat, sort of thing. So, but then it started to narrow, because the scoreboard was updating regularly, unlike the other grounds around the place. Which only updated on the end of each quarter. So we sort of knew that, Geelong were in front of Hawthorn. Even if we dropped it, we'd still be on top. But then we saw Hawthorn coming back, and obviously Hawthorn ended up getting up by 3 points. It was pretty tense out there. But luckily we had the big fella down at centre forward, and he was able to slot it through.
Yeah, David, Peter Satori, in our last home and away game, obviously sustained a hamstring, and he was probably in our top five best players. Did you think it was going to be a big hole to fill? Or
we had a lot of depth, actually. I think our reserves won the flag that year. Well, they did. Yeah, they won the flag as well that year. So, no, our depth was really strong, and, we had triple premiership players running around the reserves flag that year, Wayne Hans, Jimmy Buckley, and a couple of others, like Kenny Shelton, may have still been there. I'm not too sure about that. But, so our depth and Peter Satori, he was a terrific ball for us up forward. And, you know, he could go in and do a bit of ruck work and get around the ground, but very crafty around the forward line. And, if Kernahan wasn't getting it, he was getting it, sort of thing. And, which I think may have Coming into the grand final that year may have been the reason that, you know, Dorotich got shifted down forward to give us another tall avenue down there.
I'll tell you who was another very unlucky West Australian miss out in that premiership side. They had a great year, and in that game I watched, the North Melbourne game, was very skillful in that game, was Wayne Blackwell. Yep. Very, very unlucky. Yeah. But that just showed the depth that we had, that they couldn't squeeze him in because he would have been a premiership player 100%.
I'm trying to think now whether he's injured, or I've got a feeling he may have been injured as well. We had a few out. I mean, obviously going into the grand final, or even during the year, we had Dizzy English contracted cancer, and Peter Motley's injury, that, you know, his car accident. So, things didn't really pan out our way, but we did have we had enormous depth in the club at that stage.
Right, now let's get into it. Following that last game in 87, the first week of the finals, like I said, North, they gave it everything in that game. We got the kick after the siren to get over the line. Things went our way, but it took everything out of North, and they had Melbourne next week with Robbie Flower running rampant, and they got trounced. Johnny Kennedy wasn't very happy. He made him train through that final series and wanted to see who had the shin bone of spirit, who was up for the exhibition game, where there'd be an opportunity for a bit of redemption. Now, before that famous game in London, the Battle of Britain, at Lords, I think it was, at Lords?
The Oval.
There was a little bit of extra motivational factor added to that when Jack Elliott had something to say at the President's Lunch to do with a purse for the winner. Can you recall that at all, Rhys?
I'm just trying to think of the exact wording, but he was... very derogatory towards North Melbourne, and I think at that stage Carlton owned a heap of shares in North Melbourne or something along those lines at the time. So I can't really recall the exact. Yeah. I wouldn't want to repeat it, but it was one of those ones which is just typical of Jack Byrne, pretty arrogant, and obviously we'd won a flag a couple of weeks beforehand. So
it was a $5,000 players bonus for the winning team, and it was something along the lines, apparently, of him standing up in front of everyone there saying that he'll pay that now for his boys. Rah, rah, they won the flag. It was a Carlton arrogance moment anyway, and apparently the North Melbourne hierarchy and players were incensed, and they certainly were out for blood the next day.
Yeah, look, they were unbeknown to us, because we'd won the flag, and obviously we'd been celebrating for quite a while, and it continued on the plane trip over, and the North boys were on the same plane, but they were pretty quiet. They didn't speak to us, and then we were still partying on the plane, and we got there, and we stayed in the same place, but they didn't really associate with us, and we found out later on that John Kennedy had actually got them all after they got absolutely smashed by Melbourne in the elimination final, and just wanted to see who wanted to be there the next year. So they trained really hard through the final series, and John Kennedy had them sort of up and going and firing, and he just wanted to see which one of those wanted to be, and they took the game really serious because of that. Whereas from our point of view, we had no intention of winning that game. That was the silly thing about it. If they'd have come up and spoke to us earlier, because if you won that game, you had to go to Los Angeles and then prepare for another game, which was played up in Canada. So otherwise, you went over to Los Angeles and basically had a junket on the VFL or AFL or whatever it was at the time, and that's what we intended to do. So we had no intention of winning that game whatsoever. If we'd known beforehand, we could have told them, look, you've got nothing to worry about. You guys are going to win this game. We're not trying.
So then early in the game, the Don, he clips you one, and you get up and remonstrate, and it sort of started from there, and then, of course, led to the ugly incident with Clarko on Ian Aiken, and made...
I had a headache before he hit me. I'd only had about 3 hours sleep the night before, so I wasn't feeling that flash anyway. I didn't need to be whacked in the head, so that's why.
3 hours anyway, sleep. Must have been out with Jimmy then, Buckley, because he got home at 6 o'clock in that morning, and got a knock on the door at 9 o'clock in the morning saying someone's pulled out. You got to play. He didn't even have footy boots on him. They had to go and get him a pair of soccer shoes, which apparently were pretty weird, unusual, and uncomfortable. And but he played a very, very important part of the game, chasing Clark around the goal umpire with a gut full of piss the bear had been poked. Let's just put it that way. What are your recollection of that moment in time, and what did Clarko's head feel like after? A bit of a gravel road, apparently.
Yeah. It was a bit like a pineapple at the end, but look, he copped a few whacks, but to his credit, he stayed out there and kept going. But it reminded me of the Benny Hill, the end of the Benny Hill show when they still run around,
chasing the clock.
Because that's how it was. I remember, the goal umpire overtook me at one stage, so I knew I wasn't going to catch him. But it wasn't a great spectacle, I suppose, for the sport. But it's something that'll go down in history, I suppose.
It will. And mate, I could talk about this one for. I wish we had more time. I've got to go. Maybe we'll expand on it again next week, because there's so much to talk about with that game. But anyway, mate, appreciate you coming on. As always, thanks very much, and a few insights there in the Battle of Britain and everything else in the 87th season and against North Melbourne, who we would have been playing this week, so we appreciate that very much, and go the Blues.
No worries, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, mate.
The hyphen. Now, just have a quick chat amongst yourselves there, Chris and Craig, while I unlock my phone again and find my weekly whack.
Well, I wanted to say so many other things, because Wolsey, as a coach at the time, he was totally against going to play that game. And because we won the flag, he wanted his players and everyone else to celebrate it, and there was no time to celebrate. Had to go and play. And then also, John Kennedy was actually, they believe that he was instructing his players to go to the Biff, and reports that he actually sent a 16-year-old John Longmire onto the ground, said, just go out there and hit someone, otherwise everyone will think you're weak. And then I also recall Wolsey from, I think it was one of the balconies where the coach's box was in the Oval, actually threw a walkie-talkie at Kennedy from the coach's box. And it just missed him. Look, it would have killed him had it hit him. So Wolsey was filthy that we're actually even there playing that game.
Certainly was. Yeah. Fond memories of a wonderful time.
It was. Now, it was.
Okay, guys. Now it is time once again for the weekly whack. And it's been thrown to me this week by our producer, Chris Brownie. So thanks for that, Chris. So I'll get straight into it. Now, this week's weekly whack goes out to none other than fellow human, if we can call her that, or fellow alumni of the Cane Corn School of Career Grub Journalism, Caroline Wilson. This person rarely, if ever, has anything positive to say about the AFL community or any stakeholder of it. When the most vulnerable, impressionable young citizens in this community make a mistake and are wrapped up by their clubs, you're always the first one, Caro, the first one at the scene of the crime, like a crooked copper, knowing that someone has to pay so that you in turn remain employed. Now, don't get me wrong out there, everybody, okay? No one's condoning the silly actions of the likes of Tyson Stengel or Lockie Hunter with what's happened in the last couple of weeks, but they will be held accountable by the justice system in their respective states. They've been fined and sanctioned by their respective employers, but wait, there's more. The steak knives in these deals are always that it is played out very publicly and shamedly in the media. You, Caro, you are the crooked hand that twists the knives, those steak knives that comes with the deal. So brutally looking to attack the club, player, manager, or anyone that tries to protect a young athlete's mental health and general welfare from the media. How about advocating education and counselling for these young men as part of their rehabilitation? Nah. Drop the guillotine on them. Drop the guillotine, Caro. While the Showtime crowd roar in approval, for nurturing does not pay your bills. Sensationalism is your business, and Caro, business is good. Caro, why are you even in this industry? You clearly despise the players, despise coaches, administrators of our great game. Caro, it's time to move on. For now, Caro's arrow has become Wilson's weaseling. And that is the end of my weekly whack.
Whack.
And I think that's all pretty fair and just.
I think so.
Now, it is nearly time to go. It is Anzac Day. And it is a reminder to everyone out there, Carlton supporters or not, that so many people served for this country, and they served to protect our freedoms that we so enjoy. And for us Carlton supporters, there were 181 Carlton players enlisted for service in World War I, World War II. 17 of them made the greatest sacrifice. They are
George Chalice, Harold Daniel, Dave Gillespie, Albert Goulet, Tom McCluskey, Fenn MacDonald,
Stan McKenzie, Charlie Oliver, Albie Patterson, Jim Pender, Willie Rogers, and Alf Williamson.
Wilf Atkinson, Jim Knight, Norm DeBron, Jim Park, Henry Thompson, lest we forget.
And they will know that they've been playing against the famous old man.